Hey guys, this is Chase. Welcome to RTR Forward, where we talk about everything and anything Magic the Gathering. And today, we have some exciting things to talk about. We've got more Ikoria reveals. So we've already talked about Ikoria before, but we've got some more cards to talk about. And most importantly, we've got the most sought-out thing, apparently, out of this set, and that is the new land cycle. So if we remember back to last episode, we talked about our potential predictions for the land cycle for this new set. And, you know, it's a cycling set. It's a set that has cycling in it. So why not have the enemy cycle lands, right? Makes sense. We've already had the allied cycle lands back in Amonkhet. Makes complete sense for us to get the enemy cycle lands. And so that was my prediction. My prediction was, you know, we're going to get the enemy cycle lands. Wrong, says Wizards of the Coast. Wrong indeed. No enemy cycle lands for you. No way to fix your commander decks that are enemy colored. No way to have more fetchable enemy lands. No, thank you, Suri. Instead, they threw a 180. They flipped us over on our head and said, we're going to be printing tricolor lands. We're going to be printing fetchable tricolor lands. If you're not following me yet, fetchable tricolor land. So this is a land with three types on it, three land types. This is, I don't even know what to say. I didn't think this was ever going to happen. This is a wet dream for commander players. Standard, whatever. Other formats that have fetch lands, maybe, let me read the card. So we've got, let's just talk about the teamer one. So they're all the wedge colors. So we've got Ketria Trio. Obviously, it's a land. It counts as a forest, island, and a mountain, and you can tap it to add green, blue, or red. Enters the battlefield tapped, and it has cycling 3. So if you got this late in the game, you've got enough lands, you have some extra mana to cycle this away, pay 3 mana, discard it, draw a card. Seems like a pretty good rate. Yes, they do enter in tapped. That is kind of the downside of playing this in older formats, such as, you know, modern, legacy, vintage. Typically, you want, you know, lands that come in untapped. That's why modern has shocklands, and legacy and vintage have the dual lands. So these aren't, you know, strictly better in any way, just because they're tapping for three different colors and they're fetchable, because you're getting them in a turn tapped. For commander, though, these cards are fantastic. Like I said, every commander's wet dream. The fact that you can just play any of the allied fetch lands, which are still relatively cheap. You can get them in between, like, what, $12 to $30 for just, you know, all you need is one copy. And these can really just fetch up a multitude of colors for your deck. So these cards are a blessing to wedge-based decks. So your Sultai decks, your Temur decks, your Jeskai decks, your Mardu decks, and your Abzan decks. As for standard, I was really curious how they were going to, you know, have us play three color decks. Yes, I know we have Shocklands still, which are very nice, and they're going to be very helpful for us to continue playing three color lands until they rotate. Scrylands are, they're fine. They're kind of slow, and I kind of see Scrylands kind of transitioning out currently, you know, until rotation, transitioning maybe out of the meta in some of those three color decks, and seeing these new triome lands coming in. I know some people are calling them tricycle lands. I'll call them whatever I want to call them. I'm going to call them triome lands. I'm going to call them cycling three lands. I'm going to call them tricolor fetchable duels that interdapt and that have cycling. I'll call them what I want to call them. But these lands are nuts, at least for that aspect. Standard, it's whatever. Late game card advantage, early game, it's going to be easier to be able to, you know, tap for specific colors in a lot of three color decks. So what I find to be really interesting about these lands is the naming standard. So you got Ketria Triome, Ragurin Triome, Savai Triome, Zagath Triome, and Dotha Triome. Those are all just strictly Ikoria lands. These are referring to Ikoria locations. You don't usually see this on, you know, land cycles, because typically Wizards wants to have a land that they can reprint in any set to a degree. You know, they're usually pretty not very specific as per the naming of lands. So this one, it's very, very interesting. So it makes me believe that, you know, these lands may not get reprinted again. They may not get reprinted. Like, they're very unlikely that they're going to get reprinted in another set. If anything, they'll get reprinted in maybe a master set, maybe a commander set, maybe a core set, stuff like that. But I don't feel like we'll see lands like this unless we return to Ikoria, just because of how they're named like this, which is super weird. But anyways, these lands are cool. I personally was really hoping for the enemy lands, but Wizards again wants us to spend all the money we can, because these are going to be great pickups if you play some Commander. All right, stepping away from the tricolor lands, we're going to, you know, just discuss some more mythics from this set. So a lot of these mythics are multicolor. This is a multicolor set. It's a wedge set. So let's just kind of jump right into it. So the next card we're going to be looking at is General Kudro of Dranith. He is a legendary creature, human soldier, 3/3 for one, a white, and a black. And he says, other humans you control get +1/+1. And whenever General Kudro of Dranith or another human enters the battlefield under your control, exile target card from an opponent's graveyard. And then he has an ability that says, two, sacrifice two humans, destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. So lore-wise, this guy's kind of a jerk. If you've read the Ikoria books, or if you've, I don't know, read lore from the cards, I don't even know if they even do that nowadays. But there's a book that came out, The Sundered Bond. He is the big general of this city of Dranith, which are, they're humans, they hate monsters. I'm not very far into the book yet, but he's kind of a dick. So a very, very interesting card. I could see this potentially if we see like a Mardu humans, Abzan humans, something like that appearing in the format. We could potentially see him. He buffs other guys. He is a way to interact with your opponent's graveyard. So we just came from Theros of Beyond Death, where we have Uro, we've got Kroxa, we've just got so much graveyard manipulation. And this guy just kind of comes in, he says, all right, your Uro is gone. Your Kroxa is gone. Your escape creatures are gone. No, thank you. And then, if your Uro somehow comes onto the battlefield, he can just, you know, sacrifice two humans and kill them. So, interesting. I just like it for the pure value of just, you know, being a buff lord, and just being able to buff up your humans. Incidental effects of exiling cards. I don't know how relevant his sacrifice to humans could be. I could see him sliding his way into like a Hero Precinct 1 deck. I think they're human soldiers. Don't quote me on that. But if they're human soldiers, that's actually pretty nutty. I don't actually know. It's a good question, because you can go turn 2, Hero Precinct 1, turn 3, General Kudro, and then you immediately have two additional humans. I don't know. This guy could see some play. I don't know. It's a good question. We'll have to really see what other humans we have in the format. This set is definitely bringing in a lot of humans. Speaking of humans, let's talk about our next card. We got Cheville, or Cheville? I don't know. Bane of Monsters. He is a 2-mana, 1/3, legendary creature, human rogue, for a black and a green, and he has death touch, and at the beginning of your upkeep, if your opponents control no permanents with bounty counters on them, put a bounty counter on target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls, and whenever a permanent an opponent controls with a bounty counter on it dies, you gain 3 life and draw a card. So he's a bounty hunter. He comes in, he's a 1/3 with death touch on turn 2, so he's going to be able to eat little tokens. He's going to be a sizable annoyance. And then he's just going to start putting counters on your next turn. He'll just start putting bounty counters on creatures or planeswalkers the opponent controls. And then if they die, then you draw a card and gain 3 life. So this could be focused in, like, I don't know, this could be part of that, you know, Abzan Humans deck. So, you know, you could run it alongside General Kudro, running alongside some different removal spells. It's Skullgari, it's Abzan. There's a lot of removal in the format. And just, you know, in a way, you're just kind of cycling your removal spells. You put a bounty counter on something, kill it, gain 3 life, draw a card. Put another bounty counter on something, kill it, gain 3, draw a card. I don't know. It's really interesting. We'll really have to see kind of how this card plays out. If there is like an Abzan Humans list, and Hero Precinct 1 does make human tokens, I don't actually know. Then you could run him in there as well and just do a lot of nonsense. So next card, this is a monster. It's Fiend Artisan. It is 2-mana for a 1/1 creature nightmare. It's Golgari, so it's hybrid mana. So it's you can either pay 2 green, 2 black, a green and a black for this 1/1. Fiend Artisan gets +1/+1 for each creature card in your graveyard. And he has the activated ability of X and Golgari Hybrid to tap, sacrifice another creature, then search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less, put it into your hand or put it onto the battlefield. All right, then shuffle your library, activate this ability only time you could cast a sorcery. So as I was reading that, I was thinking like, oh, you know, they wouldn't print another birthing pod, you know, right? No. Yeah, they kind of did. Obviously, it has the cost of, you know, paying X to get something. But I mean, that's still just kind of nuts. You know, you run this, you have some token fodder, or even some small creatures that, are, you know, aren't tokens, and you sacrifice them, grab something that's a little better if you've got a little bit of mana to sink into it. And Fiend Artisan just incidentally gets bigger as well, because he gets +1/+1 for each creature in your graveyard, creature card in your graveyard. So I think he definitely could slot his way somewhere. I saw some people talking about, oh, he's the new Tarmogoyf. No, he's not the new Tarmogoyf. Tarmogoyf cares a lot more about what's in the graveyard than just creatures. So Fiend Artisan could potentially find his way into some kind of Golgari list, Sultai list. I mean, we're playing wedge colors at this point. So Sultai, Golgari, since he is two hybrid Golgari, he could fit his way into, you know, like a mono black deck, mono green deck, stuff like that. So I think this card will definitely slot its way somewhere. Maybe even like a Simic ramp, as a way to kind of like, I don't know, you sack one of your, you know, arboreal grazers and pull out one of the thieves and just steal your opponent's stuff. Like, I think that'd be pretty good. So I don't know, you could potentially see some play. Next off, we've got one of the other Apexes. I think I missed this one last episode. I don't actually know, and if I didn't, then I'm gonna cut this part. But we have Nethroi, Apex of Death, for 5 mana for a 5/5 legendary creature, Cat Nightmare Beast. He's 2 and Abzan, so it's white, black, green. Has Mutate, so for 4, a hybrid white, green, and 2 black, you can cast this spell for its mutate cost, put it over or under a target non-human creature you own. They mutate into a creature on top, plus all abilities from underneath it. And he has Death Touch, Lifelink, and whenever this creature mutates, return any number of target creature cards with total power 10 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Say hello to the win condition for Abzan Humans, because this guy is nutty. You got 7 mana, and then immediately just reanimate things. Power 10 or less, so you can grab out a lot of different things that would just incidentally, you know, in a way, overrun your opponent. I mean, you could pull out basically all the cards that I've already talked about, because they're all pretty low power. We've got, you know, Kudro, Chevelle, Fiend Artisan. That's only 5 power. You still got another 5 power to work with. I think this card's going to be pretty nutty. It is 7 mana though. Does require a creature for you to be putting it on. So I really am interested just to see how good Mutate is. I know some of these more expensive Mutate costs, probably less likely to see a lot of it in Standard. I don't actually know. Obviously, the cheaper that the Mutate gets, more likely that you're going to be able to cast it on some of your creatures. So we'll see on this one. Definitely really interesting card. I like that, you know, it allows you to kind of play around with your graveyard and reanimate a lot of things that potentially you've either pitched or have died or stuff like that. So really interesting card. Next up, we've got an Izzet card. So I love my Izzet cards. This is Riel, the Everwise. 3 mana for a 0/3 legendary creature, human wizard. 1, a blue and a red for Riel. And Riel, the Everwise, gets +1/+0 for each instant and sorcery in your graveyard. And whenever you discard 1 or more cards for the first time each turn, draw that many cards. So obviously this card syncs up really well with Cycle. So if you have her out on the field and you cycle a card, she triggers because you discarded a card and then you draw an additional card. So you're basically cycling and drawing 2, which is really cool. I think this card combos really well with the Jumpstart cards from Guilds of Ravnica. So, you know, you're obviously casting Chemist's Insight. First off, you're just going to draw 2 cards. Cast it a second time, you're going to have to discard a card. She triggers, draws you a card, and then you draw 2 more cards. So in a way, you're not, you know, losing that that disadvantage anymore of, you know, having to pitch a card to jumpstart something. So I think she fits really well with that as well. Overall, pretty interesting card. Really interested to see where we could see her. And she combos pretty nicely with the next card I'm about to talk about, and that's Narset of the Ancient Way. 1, a blue, a red, a white for a 4 mana, 4 loyalty, legendary planeswalker Narset. So Narset is back. We haven't seen Narset in a long time. We haven't actually seen her since the, what is it, Dragons of Tarkir, where she was Azorius. So she is back, and she is kicking real hard. If you look at the art, she's actually, it looks like she's kicking the red symbol, kicking the white symbol. I don't really know what she's doing. She's like, you know what? Red's not usually in my CMC, or at least once I've ascended to planeswalkerness. I'm just going to kick that out of there. But she has three abilities and an ultimate. So no static ability on this card, unlike Vivian that we saw in the previous episode. So she's got a plus one. You gain two life. Add blue, red, or white. Spin this mana only to cast a non-creature spell. She has a minus two. Draw a card, then you may discard a card. You see what I mean? I told you it was going to sync up with Riel. You can discard a card, and when you discard a non-land card this way, Narset of the Ancient Way deals damage equal to that card's converted mana cost to target creature or planeswalker. Then you have minus six. You get an emblem with whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this emblem deals two damage to any target. So, obviously, Narset, she's a package deal. You know, she's going to slot her way right into, like, mid-range or control builds, for sure. So her plus one immediately gains you two life, and then gives you, you know, one of red, blue, or white to spend on a non-creature spell. So she's, in a way, she's a little bit of ramp in colors that usually don't have that, you know, that capability, which is pretty neat. Additionally, her minus two filters you, you know, drawing and then discarding. And whatever you discard, let's see, you know, opponent's got a big old boy on the other side, you know, a 6-6, you know, a 7-6, who knows? And then you just pitch, you know, a 6-mana card, a 7-mana card that you're not going to be casting it, you know, probably at that point. And you draw yourself a new card, discard that card, and then immediately just shoot that creature down. Also does it notably to planeswalkers too, so play this against a... let's say like a Nissa, and she's, you know, she comes out the previous turn, she's at six loyalty now, pitch a 6-mana card and boom, dead immediately. This card is nuts. I think her first two abilities are definitely going to be used way more than her last ability, and that's you get an emblem, and then whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this emblem deals two damage to any target. So I would see this emblem really being used as maybe a potential win condition. Typically control decks, you know, they're more reactive than proactive, so they're not going to be running like bolts or lightning strikes or anything like that. We'll see. I don't even think they'd run shocks either in that point, but I could see like a tempo Jeskai deck, maybe splashing white for Narset, running, you know, Riel and running a bunch of just quick, you know, ops and shocks and just a bunch of different things. I could see something like that that could potentially take advantage of this ult. But for the most part, you care about those first two abilities for sure. So I think Narset's going to be a really powerful card, standard wise. I don't really know. I don't really see her, you know, going anywhere else for the most part. But I'm really excited to give her a try and potentially see her power level. And I think she's going to be pretty strong. Next up, we've got Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy. 2 mana, a blue and a green, for a legendary creature, Human Druid, 2-2. And whenever you tap a non-land permanent for mana, add 1 mana of any type that permanent produced. Has an activated ability of 5, a green and a blue. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put a non-human creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. First thing I'll say about this card, if you play this card against me in Commander, I'm going to be very mad, and I'm going to build a deck that just destroys this deck, because this card is nuts. All right, so he immediately lets all your mana dorks, he lets all your artifacts tap for an additional mana. One interesting little combo in Commander is I believe it's Basalt Monolith, which is I think it's a 3-mana artifact that adds 3, and then you can pay 3 to untap it, and it doesn't untap. I think that's what it does. So immediately with this card and Basalt Monolith, you can just go off and just wreck house and have infinite colorless mana. You know, cast, if you've got a bunch of Eldrazi in your deck, cast that. I think this card is really nuts in that format. I don't think this card is going to be very good in Standard. Yes, we'll see. We have Gilded Goose, and we got Paradise Druid, stuff like that. But we don't have a ton of mana dorks. So maybe we could potentially see this as like a mana accelerant, slash win condition in like a Simic ramp deck, but I think that's a little far-fetched. I think this card definitely will see more play in maybe some other formats. I don't think this card's going to see much play. Next off, we have a card that I can barely read because it was only spoiled as a email sent to players from MTG Arena. And so this is, it's in the MTG Arena style. And this is Winota, Joiner of Forces. I wanted to make sure I said that right. It's 4 mana, 2, a red and a white for a legendary creature, human W. I think it's warrior, for a 4/4. And whenever a non-human creature you control attacks, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may put a human creature card from among them onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking. It gains indestructible. Until end of turn, put the rest of the cards on the bottom of your library in a random order. It's a commander card. I don't know what to tell you. This isn't a standard card. Like, red white's not good in standard. And how often do we have non-human creatures attacking? Not very often. At least in those colors. This card, I don't think this card's super good. I think it's okay. I think it could find a home in Commander is like a nice, I mean, it's a different effect than you usually see in red-white. It's not like a tokens ability. It's really just, you know, play big creatures, play non-humans, and then just attack with them. And she'll trigger for, you know, each of those. So potentially could pull some pretty interesting things out. I don't really like that she pulls humans out. I feel like if it was the opposite, if a human attacked and it pulled out something non-human, I think that would be much better. There aren't, at least in the current, you know, standard format, there are not a ton of really good humans as compared to other non-humans. So I think that card's really going to not see a lot of play in this format, but potentially could be pretty cool in Commander. I know Boros needs a lot of help in Commander. Not exactly the best color pair. Next up, we've got Eerie Ultimatum. So yes, you heard me right. Ultimatum. We had Ultimatums, what, back in the Alara block. And they were the, you know, the other colors. I can't think of them. The not wedges. They're something else. I can't think of it right now. But it's basically the other color pairs. So like Naya, Bant, Grixis, stuff like that. So this is the one for Abzan. So this is Eerie Ultimatum. So it's 7 mana. It's a white, a black, a green, and a green. For a 7 mana sorcery, and it is return any number of permanent cards with different names from your graveyard to the battlefield. This spells a house, all right? So what you'll see as we kind of walk through a few of these ultimatums is like the power level on these has been like cranked up to like 11, all right? So these are really strong. I don't know how good they're going to be in standard. I think if anything, this one is going to be pretty good in standard potentially. Yes, it is 7 mana. Yes, it is very color heavy. But being able to just kind of pull as any amount of permanent cards out of your graveyard, as long as they just have different names, like, that's nuts, okay? You can pull a lot of great planeswalkers out. You can pull enchantments. You can pull artifacts. You can pull creatures. Like, you can pull a lot with this. And you could potentially, you know, if you're milling yourself a lot and have a lot in the graveyard, you could really just steal the game. Notably, it is your graveyard, not the opponent's graveyard as well. That'd be a little nutty. We already kind of have a card like that, but that card hasn't been seeing a lot of play. And this card, interesting. It could potential blowout in like more multiplayer formats. Standard, I don't really know. We'll have to see what an Abzan deck looks like in this format. I feel like, at least from what they've shown so far, it's going to be a lot more low to the ground than what potentially what this card is going for. So I don't know. Next off, we have Emergent Ultimatum. It is black, black, green, 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 blue, blue for a 7 mana sorcery. Search your library for up to 3 monocolored cards with different names and exile them. An opponent chooses one of those cards. Shuffle that card into your library. You may cast the other cards without paying their mana costs. Exile Emergent Ultimatum. So, not a lot of combos in standard. I don't really think there are like any game-winning combos in standard. This could potentially get some pretty decent stuff. You know, you could pull out Anissa, like it is monocolored, which doesn't really bode really well with a lot of the legendaries in this set, a lot of the good cards in this set. I think this card was definitely aimed more at Commander. So playing this in like a Sultai deck, you can immediately get up some of the cards that people hate, like Omniscience and Expropriate and Enter the Infinite, stuff like that, and just build some really stupid combos. So this is a win the game card. This is a win the game card for Commander. It's not one for Standard. I don't think it'll see play in really any other formats. I just can't think of anything right now that you could really spend 7 mana on and just like have such an incredible advantage. That's mono colored, and that's the main restriction on this. Doesn't allow you to cast like get Eldrazi in other formats, stuff like that, because they are colorless. So overall, this is a card made for Commander. The next card is going to be the bane of a lot of people's existences while playing Commander and potentially Standard for, you know, the foreseeable future. I call this the Cyclonic Rift of board wipes. Not even just board wipes, but non-land board wipes, because this is Ruinous Ultimatum. It is red, red, white, 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 black, black for a 7-mana sorcery. Destroy all non-land permanents your opponents control. I mean, I have a Marchesa deck, Queen Marchesa deck, and I'm going to slot this bad boy into this deck so fast. This card's going to be nuts in that deck, but like, oh my gosh. Any Mardu deck, any 5-color deck, like, why not run this card, right? Yes, it has a really heavy color imbalance, so you know, you need a lot of white sources, and a lot of black sources, red sources, stuff like that, but like, this card is nuts. Just destroying everything that's not yours. So anything but lands, say goodbye. They're gone. And just a one-sided board wipe are just insane. And so in Standard, potential implications could be like, I've seen some people talking about putting this in like a Fires of Invention deck in the sideboard, potentially. So you could like Fae of Wishes for Ruinous Ultimatum, wipe your opponent's old board, and just, you know, stabilize, stuff like that. So I think this card will be a nice stabilizer in that. But other than that, I don't think this card's going to really see play in Standard. Maybe, probably not a lot of the internal formats. Definitely will see play in Commander. 100% will see play in Commander. People are going to be complaining about this card for the next 15 years, just like they've been complaining about Cyclonic Rift. So next up, we've got what I would consider the most disappointing card of the Ultimatum cycle. I guess this is what happens when you put white in a spell that doesn't have black in it. This is Splendum Ultimatum. It is blue, blue, red, 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 white, white for a sorcery, 7 mana. Target player gains 5 life. Splendid Ultimatum deals 5 damage to any target, and you draw 5 cards. So I like the draw 5 cards. Okay, that's pretty good. 7 mana, draw 5 cards. I pay 6 and I draw 5, and I draw 4 on average. So like 1 extra mana for an additional card is fine with me. Okay, cool. Dealing 5 damage to any target, it's all right. You know, if pesky permanent, pesky planeswalker, kill it. Pesky face, kill it. Pesky creature, kill it. Okay, easy. All right, gaining 5 life though. That I'm not gonna pay 7 mana to gain 5 life, right? That's just not good. We've seen effects that you know you can gain 5 life, 3 mana, stuff like that. I think that really. This card definitely got nerfed before it was revealed. 100%. This card got nerfed in testing. This card probably did something really nutty with the white part, because obviously the red parts deal damage, the blue parts draw cards, but the white part, it definitely probably did something a little more nutty. And so, yeah, this card's kind of disappointing. I don't think this card will see play really anywhere. If you want to play in Commander, you play in Commander, but it's not going to see play anywhere else. So that's my conversation on that. And if you'll notice, we're actually missing an ultimatum from this little cycle, and that is the Teemer Ultimatum. We will find that out when the full reveal is on Friday. I'm recording this on Thursday, the day before, so I'll talk about that in the next episode once it gets revealed. Very, very high hopes for it. Hopefully it'll be on par with the other 3 ultimatums and not on par with the Jeskai one. So, fun stuff. Moving on, we have a cycle of 3-color enchantments, so wedge color enchantments. The first one we have is Song of Creation. It is 4 mana, 1, a green, a blue, and a red for an enchantment. And it has a few lines of text on it, a few pretty good lines of text on it. You got, you may play an additional land on each of your turns. Okay, cool. Play extra lands. Seems pretty green-blue. All right. Whenever you cast a spell, draw 2 cards. All right. Yeah. That seems pretty good. Okay, so play extra lands, draw extra cards every time I cast something. Cool, cool, cool. And then at the beginning of your end step, discard your hand. So there's the red with it. Honestly, I don't see discarding your hand as a cost for this card. Like, sure, yeah, I'm gonna play cards, draw lots of cards, play extra lands, and I'll just kill you with what I draw that turn. Like, this card is insane. This card is nuts. People are already talking about how this card could see play in a potential like team or storm deck in modern, stuff like that. You could do a lot with this card. I think this card could slot its way into like the team or breach decks in Pioneer, stuff like that. I think this card, if there's a team or deck in Standard, this card will be in there because there's just so much value. This is the coffee pot of mono red on a three color, card. Like, that's what it is. So, we got the coffee pot, which name I cannot think of right now, but you know what I'm talking about. It's the red enchantment. It's still actually legal, though no one's really been playing it, but, it lets you play cards off the top of your library. You can't play cards from your hand. This card's very similar to this. This card is like, hey, if you have a spell in hand, it is more than likely that you're going to be drawing a lot of cards, right? Because you're just going to, draw two, draw another spell, draw two, draw another spell, draw two, cast another spell. Boom, 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 boom. Just nuts. I see this card as a way for me to die more often because I'll probably end up milling myself out with this card. And that's because I just know when I play this card with Thassa's Oracle, Thassa's Oracle will be the last card. I will, so one card in library. I'll have a full hand of cards, of spells, and I'll cast a spell because I'm like just digging for it. And, I have to draw two cards. So I draw the first card, Thassa's Oracle, second card, and I'm dead. So I'm feeling that's going to happen. But Song of Creation, really good card. I'm really excited to see how this impacts different formats. Really good for Commander, stuff like that. Moving on, Offspring's Revenge. For a 5-mana enchantment, 2, a red, a white, a black. At the beginning of your combat on your turn, exile target red, white, or black creature card from your graveyard. Create a token that's a copy of that card, except it's a 1/1. It gains haste until your next turn. Notably, does not disappear. So effects usually like this, that the token dies at the end of your end step, stuff like that. This does not go away. So it's a way to potentially re-enable some Enter the Battlefield effects. So potentially, I know it's Mardu and it's a red, white, or black creature, so you don't get like a lot of the explosive blue and green Enter the Battlefield effects. But there's some pretty decent ones. And some of the other colors, I don't know why right now. All I can think of is Yharok's Fin Lurker, which is the one that makes an opponent exile a card. I can't think of anything else right now. I'm sure they'll come to me, but this is a pretty interesting card. It is 5 mana. I think this card was definitely built for Commander. Potentially some Commander decks. There are some cards in those colors that have some nutty Enter the Battlefield effects, and just being able to use that effect again if once that creature dies is just really, really strong. As for Standard, this could be potentially put in as part of a combo with like if there's like a Mardu sacrifice deck, just getting all those triggers off of things dying and then dying again and stuff like that. Since it does just exile at the beginning of your combat, it doesn't exile it when it goes to the graveyard, so you still get those dice triggers. So potentially that could see play there. I'm just really interested. I do think the cost of 5 mana is really heavy for a deck like that. So we'll see. Moving on, we've got Death's Oasis. This is another tricolor enchantment. This one is Abzan. It's just a white, a black, and a green for a 3-mana enchantment. It's got a few effects on it. The first one is whenever a non-token creature you control dies, put the top two cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a creature card with lesser converted mana cost than the creature that died from your graveyard to your hand. Pay one, sacrifice Death's Oasis. You gain life equal to the greatest converted mana cost among creatures you control. So, if you want to play this out and, stuff dies, then sure, you mill and then return something. So, this is... could be slotted potentially into a humans deck. Abzan humans. It is only 3 mana. If human dies, this triggers. You could potentially bring that human back or something even better. The fact that it does make you return things that are cost less then what died is kind of a big drawback. So, you know, if a one mana creature dies, this isn't doing anything. You know, it's milling you two, and then that's it. The other effect is really weird. Pay one, sacrifice it, gain life equal to the greatest converted mana cost among creatures you control. So, like, potentially this could be used in a pinch. If, you know, you're at death's door and you need to gain some life, you can sack this enchantment and gain some life. I don't really know what this enchantment will do. It's the fact that it makes you return something that costs less than what died.
I don't know about this one. I think this one probably fits a little bit better into maybe a few commander decks. And I'll say that with anything, because half of these, anybody can play a card in commander. So it's immediately commander playable, easy. But as for standard, I don't really think so. Next off, we've got, man, Wizards just hates Jeskai, because this is a Whirlwind of Thoughts. It's one, a blue, a red, and a white for a 4-mana enchantment. And it says, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, draw a card. That's it. Oh, you were expecting more? You were expecting, like, a few more clauses on it? No. No, my friend. For this is a card that has red, white, and blue in it, not green and blue in it. For this card must be weaker, says the man in the big chair that strokes a poster of the Simic Guild. No. So, yes, this is definitely quite a lower power level than Song of Creation, which is 4-mana teamer colors, lets you pay extra lands, lets you draw 2 cards if you cast a spell. But, I mean, yeah, you have to discard your hand. Sure, whatever. Like, that's fine. I'm going to be generating so much card advantage that it doesn't even matter that I have to discard my hand, because I'm going to play my hand. I'm in teamer. I have a bunch of lands anyways. I got all this extra mana. Whereas, like, sure, Jeskai, yeah, draw extra spells when you cast things. This could potentially see play. No, this card's not going to see play. Not as long as Teferi's in the format. Teferi's just going to come down and bounce this boy. Whereas, I mean, at least with, you know, the Song of Creation, you can immediately play a land and get, you know, that extra land out. So it's not completely worthless. I don't know. I don't like Whirlwind of Thoughts. You can dig it up with my lawyer. All right, moving on. So we've got our final... As you can tell, before I move on, actually... we're also missing a card in this cycle, so we're missing the Soul Tie enchantment. That will also be revealed tomorrow. Apparently Wizards wanted to make it this thing where, you know, since reveal season was a week shorter, they decided to put some cards that were, you know, finishers of cycles and put them in the full reveal instead of having individual people reveal them. So that's pretty interesting. Next off, we're going to move into another cycle that is also missing a card that will be revealed in my next episode or tomorrow, depending on how you get your magic cards. Next up, we have Mythos of Brokos, which is me every time I play Magic the Gathering, because I'm literally always broke because cardboard costs a lot of money. It's 2 and 2 green for a 4-mana sorcery. Has a pretty neat little clause that says, if a blue and a black was spent to cast this spell, search your library for a card, put that card into your graveyard, then shuffle your library. And then it says, return up to 2 permanent cards from your graveyard to your hand. So... this is a pretty neat little cycle that has you pay a primary color, and then if you pay the other 2 colors as part of that wedge, it'll give you an additional effect. So for this one, it searches your library for a card, puts it in your graveyard, and then you can immediately return it to your hand. This card is going to be pretty interesting. I could see this in, like, you know, Soul Tie, potential Reanimator. I mean, you could throw... this is on turn 4, you could... tutor up a Nissa and a Hydroid Crisis, put them in your yard, and then get them back, and then next turn play Nissa. Like, this card is a regrowth, a double regrowth with a tutor on it, potentially, so I think this card's gonna be pretty good. I don't know how many you'd run in the average deck, but I think this card has enough valid targets, since it's 2 permanents, that I think this card could potentially see a lot of play. The fact that you can tutor up makes this even better, which you'll kind of see as the theme with these cards. Next up, we've got Mythos of Vadrok. This is also 2 and 2 red for a sorcery. Mythos of Vadrok deals 5 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers. If white-blue was spent to cast the spell, until your next turn, those permanents can't attack or block, and their activated abilities can't be activated. So say hello to the board stall for Jeskai, because you play this out and you could play Jeskai Fires, Jeskai Control, stuff like that. Play this, potentially pick off some creatures or some pesky Teferis that are hanging around at one loyalty. And then any creatures that didn't die just can't attack you next turn. So it's like a fog to a degree. It also stops them from activating abilities. So get all them pesky ability creatures out of here too. And it does say that just, you know, their active abilities can't be activated. So if it's a mana creature, it can't be activated. So typically with clauses of like, oh, your activated abilities can't be activated, it usually like plays into like, oh, but mana abilities are fine. This one doesn't say that. So this one just like, hey, I'm gonna ping a few of your creatures. Hey, one of them is a mana dork that doesn't die, which most of them will. You can tap it for mana. So pretty interesting. I think this card will probably see a little bit of play too. I mean, it's a pseudo kill spell / pseudo save you some life and fog enemy creatures. So I think this card will be really interesting. Moving on to probably my favorite card from this cycle. You know, these cards are all really good, but this one's really cool. So this is Mithros of Nethroi. It's 2 and a black for an instant. Destroy target non-land permanent if it's a creature or if green-white was spent to cast this spell. Okay, so obviously that's incredibly confusing for, you know, if you're just listening to this. So this basically says if you can, so if you don't play green-white, so if you just, you know, you're casting two, let's just say you have 3 swamps and you cast this, you can only destroy target non-land permanent if it's a creature. Okay, so it's a 3-mana instant speed creature removal spell. Well, let's say that you're running, I don't know, 3 of the tricycle lands, the triomes, and so you got 3 Obzon lands, so you tap a black, a green, and a white. This spell could immediately now destroy anything that's not a land. So this can, you know, take out a Teferi, you can take out a Nissa, you can take out a pesky enchantment or pesky artifact. This card is going to be really good. There is a card reminiscing of this called Maelstrom Pulse. And that card is an historic, and that card is a house. Maelstrom Pulse, though, does, you know, kill everything that has a, shares a name with it as well, which this card doesn't. But this card is an instant, so 3-mana instant that could potentially, if you have the right colors of mana, you know, get rid of any non-land permanent, is pretty nutty. So I think this card will definitely see play if there's an Obzon shell. I think some decks may even just be leaning towards Obzon because, I mean, it's going to have the best removal, for sure. I mean, Assassin's Trophies, Mithros of Nethroi, a bunch of different things. So I really like this card. And finally, so this is the last one of this cycle, besides the one that hasn't been revealed yet. And it's actually the last one of this video as well. And this is Mythos of Snapdax. It is 2 white-white for a sorcery. Each player chooses an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and Planeswalker from among the non-land permanents they control, then sacrifices the rest. Okay, it seems fine. Oh, if you pay black and a red, then you can choose those permanents instead. So if you decide to cast this as red, black, white, white, then you can immediately go, hey, all right, so you over there with your creatures and your enchantments and Planeswalkers, I'm going to choose this artifact. I'm going to choose this creature, this enchantment, and this Planeswalker, and you got everything else is gone, all right? You sacrifice the rest. So it's kind of reminiscent of another spell that we saw several sets ago. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was 5 mana, 2 white and 3 colorless. That basically let you do the same effect, which allowed you to choose each type of card that each player controls, and then they have to sacrifice the rest. So the fact that you can do this potentially for 4 mana, though, if you were playing Mardu, makes it pretty powerful, being able to cherry pick some different cards. You know, if your opponent's got a 7-7 Krasis and like a little mana dork, they got a goose. You could just choose the goose. Krasis is gone. So I think this card could potentially be really good. I don't know how good it's going to be in Standard, since there aren't a ton of different choices. So like opponent's not usually going to have like a Nissa and a, I don't know, what is it, a Vivian or something, I don't know, just it's some other Planeswalker that's not good. And they're just, It's just not gonna. That's not gonna happen. So more often than not, you're gonna be casting this against one planeswalker. So you have to choose that one. So it's not actually gonna die. So I do like this card though for commander. So like I said earlier, I got a Queen Marchesa deck, and this card's gonna slide its way right in. And actually, it's gonna replace that Gideon card because I can cast this card for one mana less, and that's what makes this card really good. So that's basically this cycle. We're waiting for the blue one. So it's going to be like, what, blue and then a green and a red. So it's the teamer one. You see Wizards holding back on their teamer cards a little bit. We didn't get the teamer ultimatum. We're not getting the teamer mythos. I don't know. We'll have to see. But that basically carries us up through all the cards I wanted to talk about the day. But there's still a lot to talk about. Still a lot more we're going to discuss. And I'll have the full spoiler to use at my advantage for the next episode. So until then, everybody stay safe in this crazy time and this pandemic. I know I haven't left my house in 4 weeks. So if you're like me, then you're probably doing all right. If you unfortunately have to leave the house, then stay safe. And we'll catch you next time and talk a little bit more about some Ikoria. See you guys.